diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Show, Samantha Hill and Hannah Churchill will be telling us a little bit about Thrill.
So if you could introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about your work, that'd be great.
Just shutting one door there. Yeah, so I'm Samantha Hill. I'm the program coordinator here at Thrill. I've been the program coordinator for approximately 4 years minus two maternity leaves. So I am also a CANTRA, which is the Canadian Therapeutic Riding Association. I am a CANTRA certified instructor here at Thrill as well. And yeah, that's my role.
So hi, Cam. My name is Hannah Churchill. I joined Thrill about 3 years ago. My mom started volunteering here after we moved to Cajun, so up in the Heart of the Lakes, closer to Lindsay from Toronto. So I started volunteering with her, and then shortly after, I was hired. So I became more of a Thrill assistant, so helping with the volunteer role as a paid worker, and then stayed for 3 years and became a volunteer coordinator.
So how does Thrill reach out to those who could potentially benefit from therapeutic riding?
Word of mouth, I would say, is our biggest way of reaching out to others. So we've got a wonderful participation base who they love to share about the work here we do at Thrill. So I'd say a lot of the referrals that we get come from, you know, I know so-and-so who rides in the program, and they say great things about you. So word of mouth, and then we do our best to do some community outreach. So we've, you know, we're currently heading to the fair in Lindsay, the Lindsay exhibition, in a couple weeks, and so we'll be there doing that. We've worked with some other organizations, so we're currently talking to KLS, which is the Port of the Lakes Autism Support Group, and then we've also been in chat with some local schools to, you know, maybe do some school programming, and also with the CNIB, so that to do maybe some assessment rides for some of their participants.
So for someone with a disability, what are some of the key benefits of therapeutic riding?
So many benefits. So there's so many physical benefits that can come from it. So the movement of a horse mimics how our hips move and the way our gait works. And then there's so many social and emotional benefits. So horses mimic your disposition. So they're soothing and calming, and they just help regulate, you know, that nervous system.
And horses, I found, have been a great kind of equalizer for any people that come in. So a lot of our volunteers maybe have come from different situations. Someone with a disability is obviously coming into this space, and regardless, if there's absolutely nothing to say, if there's a horse in front of us, so that's something that starts a conversation up, and a wonderful conversation, I find. That could be just a lot of laughter and smiling and looking at a horse. Maybe they're doing something silly, or they're just being themselves, and that can spark a lot of happiness right away.
So what are some of the most common adaptations you make for riders?
So you mean like how we physically change when they're getting like the track and stuff that we use?
Yes.
Okay, so
I mean, I feel like it's limitless. So a lot of different adaptations depends on the writer's needs, depends on the horse.
Yeah, so here at Thrill, we're very fortunate. We actually have a mechanical lift. So we have several participants who come in a wheelchair, and they go right up to our ramp, and we have that lift that can lift them right out of their wheelchair and onto the horse. We have different types of reins. We have different saddles. We have toe caps. We have, you know, we have sensory bands that we can add to a saddle for that tactile sensation some riders might be looking for.
Very much endless. If we think of something, or if something comes to mind that we haven't thought of yet, we will adapt to their needs, absolutely.
So, in your time with Thrill, is there a success moment or story that stands out for each of you that you'd like to share?
For each of us, sure. Let me share a story.
Sure.
I'll let you share it. Okay, I'll let you share the rider who left it for me.
So we have one rider. She's, I would say, probably closer 9-ish.
Ten.
Okay, so this would have been when she had first started. Nonverbal, and it was just having a really hard day, you know, lots of crying, upset, and she was kind of over near our mounting platform. And the horse that she rides, her name is Coco, she is not a snuggly horse. So there are some horses that love to have their faces pet, they love to be brushed, you know, they love that interaction, and this is not her. She's very good at her job, but she's not the emotional connection kind of horse. And she, we were keeping the horse away because we didn't know what was going to happen. We just thought, you know, if we kept Coco further away, we let this rider have, you know, her time, and we let her process what was going on. And that horse dragged the volunteer from the middle of the arena over to this little 7-year-old who was having a hard time on the mounting block and put her head in her lap. And that horse stood there with her head in this child's lap until she was calm, until she was ready. And it was the most beautiful thing I think a lot of us have ever seen, especially from a horse that we did not expect it from. And, you know, that rider calmed down, she was okay, and they continued on with their lesson. And it was, that connection they have is so beautiful, the two of them. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's very special. I'd say one of the success stories that I found while being here at Thrill and working in the arena with lessons going on, we had a rider who was experiencing some later stages of dementia. This rider was no longer verbal. Her husband was trying to find different ways to kind of have her out of the house and doing things that he, you know, wanted to have her maybe get some enjoyment either just from being able to be around other people or be around animals. And he knew that she had some experiences with horses when she was a lot younger. So this is many, many, many years before he had brought her here. She had a little bit of trouble walking, so a little bit of trouble with her balance, and he was not sure if she would even be able to get on the horse. We took one look at her and said, we're going to do this and do our very best to have her try to ride. And we did. And the second she got on that horse, she was nice and tall. The posture was phenomenal. She was able to hold on. The way that she could sit in the saddle was like she had been doing it and she had never stopped. And it was just a way to have her kind of regain that control. And she was the rider in the saddle just as she was so many years ago. And that's all that mattered for her.
Like, thank you both for taking the
do this, but if you can stay
for a sec, that'd be great.
What was that, sorry, can we?
Oh, I'm sorry. Want to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, no problem. Thank you so much for having us.
It's my pleasure.
In this segment of our show, Hubert Van Niekerk will be giving us an update on Every Canadian Counts.
So, what's the latest with ECC and the possibility of a national disability insurance strategy as it relates to customer service and the options therein?
Yeah, I don't know for sure, Cam, if it's customer service or just getting I suppose we think customer service is if people with disabilities are our clients, then But as we speak, I'm on the way to a member of Parliament in Toronto just to talk about the budget submission going towards the fall budget that will come out, I think, in December. So what we want to, of course, do is get in on that budget and have the government begin the process, do the research, have the public consultations that are necessary to let people know that this could be an option to have a fully funded, publicly funded national disability insurance plan for all those with lifelong disabilities from cradle to end of life.
So why are you pushing so hard to make this a priority? Why is it important for citizens with disabilities to have this option?
Well, I think one of the, you could say people with disabilities, there's 16.4% of people with disabilities are in poverty. And most of that would be caused because of the extra expenses, or a lot of it would be caused by the extra expenses of the cost of disabilities, whether that's equipment, in medicine, housing, all these things they don't get now, which drives them into hopelessness and further poverty and further mental illness. So there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. I would have to say, based on what Australia has, they have almost 700,000 people now on that system, on a similar system that we're trying to put in. There would have to be, I would imagine, at least a million people in this country that would benefit greatly and finally be able to live in dignity and have their human rights met to give dignity and equality and equity. So that's why it's important. There's a lot of people literally starving and dying and applying for medical assistance and dying because they cannot make ends meet, and their life is just getting worse. So this has to be a high priority for not just politicians, not just for people with disabilities, but all Canadians.
So with all the turmoil you hear about, how do we keep national disability insurance strategy at the forefront? How do we keep it fresh in the minds of those who need to hear it? And so much as you hear about things like the tariffs and financial hardship, how would having this strategy have an impact on that?
Yeah, to keep it on the forefront, you know, at some point the government's going to have to say, you know what, we have to look at this. For 9 years, every Canadian Counts now has been pushing for this model. There's other things that have gotten away in the way, like the Accessibility Canada Act took up all the energy, and the Disability Inclusion Action Plan, which we also were part of, and then the Canada Disability Benefit. You know, our idea of a national disability plan, I believe, was kind of put to the back burner. So it needs to come to the front of the back burner. We had a petition here that had lots of signatures on it. But then with the dissolution of Parliament, it fell flat. So, you know, we may start up a petition again to get it out in front of people. But lots of people are just not aware that something like this is possible. So unless we have, you know, money brought into our coffers to do some public spending on media, radio, TV, those types of things, people will never know this exists. So we need the government really to say, okay, let's us do the necessary research. Let's talk to people with disabilities. Let's talk to organizations that are doing their best to represent people with disabilities, and put this in the front. And the government, you know, we're thinking probably somewhere between 6 and 10 million that it'll take for them to do that necessary research that will eventually bring in about $50 billion a year into such a fund that we're talking about. Australia's is right around 40, 42 billion right now. So with our larger population, I think when this is fully rolled out, and this is going to take some time, because the government would have to do some pilot projects and testing, make sure that it's rolling out correctly. So it's, you know, we just have to keep at it. It's a big program, but at the same time, there's an economic benefit. So when you talk about tariffs and the big push of trying to save money because of the tariffs, if you think of disability as an industry, as a business, by creating a national disability insurance plan, it will create hundreds of thousands of jobs, probably 200 to 300,000 jobs. It will create a whole infrastructure of things that are needed, whether it's wheelchairs, equipment, technology, all those things that are related to disability could all be homegrown. So when we're talking about Build Canada Strong, which is a slogan that the current government is using, there's nothing better than to include 27% of the people in this country that have a disability significant enough that affects their daily life. So think of this as an industry. And certainly out of Australia, they've done the tests or the research that shows that every dollar you actually put into something like this, you get $2.25 back. So there's no better return on your money. Include people with disabilities and get value for the dollars you put in.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes, make sure you mention our everycanadiancounts.com.
Yeah, got you in there.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
To listen again, press 1.
Hey honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
To listen again, press...
Hey honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
To listen.
Hey honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
When you lose someone, the first thing you forget about them is their voice. With your help, we can prevent more lives from being silenced. MAD Canada. No alcohol, no drugs, no victims. Find out more at mad.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Samantha Hill and Hannah Churchill about Thrill, and we heard a little bit about Every Canadian Counts from Hubert Van Niekerk. In this segment of our show, Doris Foster and Julie Green will be telling us about a new food guide for celiac patients.
So what can you tell me about the new guide for celiac patients?
Okay, so we created this guide because we know there's a need in the celiac community to improve gluten-free food service in healthcare. So we know this from surveys we've done with our community. We know this from comments we receive on social media, and we know this from personal experience that's shared with us. So we created this guide to help food service managers in healthcare improve the service to celiac patients.
So how did you reach out to folks to let them know that this was coming and there would be improvements for these guides?
Julie, would you like to speak to that?
Sure, yeah. ConAgra Foods, sorry, give me a second now, Cam. I just want to make sure I say this properly. ConAgra Brands Canada has been an integral part of this resource and getting the word out. So we've established a partnership with them, and they've connected us with Cisco, and with their support, we've been able to release this out to all stakeholders in our community, as well as champion it through food service networks within Canada. And we're using a variety of mediums, so everything from press releases to webinars. And the partnership will continue through the year. We've got magazine articles going out, and we hope to build on this over the coming years. It's really a first-of-its-kind initiative. I haven't seen anything similar to this come out anywhere in North America, so it is exciting, and the feedback from the community has been overwhelmingly positive.
So what are some of the key benefits for those with celiac?
When you have celiac disease, you have to control gluten in your diet, and that can be challenging when you lose access to your kitchen. So when you eat at home and you're really familiar with the diet, you can control it. Really small amounts of gluten can make people sick. So once you get into an institutional setting, like in healthcare, whether you're in a hospital or a retirement home or long-term care, you lose access to your kitchen, and you lose access to that control. So you're relying on somebody else to feed you safely. So that's what's really important here, teaching the people who provide food service in those settings how to do it safely and trying to make it easier for them. These are really busy kitchens with lots of pressures and demands, and so the guide is trying to help them deliver this service safely for the patient and easier for the staff.
I'm guessing it was all put in relatable language, that something that these kitchens can easily understand, and so just to make it easy to use.
The target audience of the guide is really for the leadership of the food service team, but there are tools in the guide for the frontline staff that are in really simple terms and really try to boil it down to key points. So the guide has a lot of information for the leadership people, but also sort of down-to-earth tools for the frontline staff.
So for those who might not be as familiar, what are some of the common impacts of celiac?
Well, there are many. So celiac disease, we had a campaign in May for Celiac Month, and the theme of it was the chameleon. So celiac disease has many, many symptoms. It impacts the body in different ways. So there are the typical GI symptoms where you might have bloating and constipation. You stop absorbing your food properly, so you start to get nutrient deficiencies. But there are also many other symptoms that you can have. You can have neurological symptoms, you can have brain fog, you can have swollen joints. Basically, it's a multi-symptom disease, and that's why it's hard to diagnose. It takes a long time for the disease to be diagnosed because it looks like other things.
Yeah, to build on that, essentially what happens, Cam, is, you know, you're unable to absorb nutrients from the food you take in, and therefore that can manifest in all of these different symptoms that Doris has mentioned, which can lead then to complications like bone health issues. It can lead to like stomach cancer if it's left untreated, and on and on. And so it is really important to get an early diagnosis before these additional complications occur. And we're estimating that, you know, over 340,000 people in Canada likely have celiac but don't know it.
So what are the next steps in your work with the guide being released? Are there any projects on the horizon?
So,
yes.
Go ahead.
So just in terms of getting the message out, we will continue to share this resource with our community across the country. So if someone has a family member or a loved one in long-term care and needs support or help, they can take this guide and advocate for that person with the team at the facility that they're engaged with, number one. And then number two, we will be offering a webinar with Chef Daryl Nee too, for patients and families about cooking safely in long-term care facilities. So that's really exciting. And Doris, I think you had some additional comments you wanted to add.
Oh, I just wanted to say that on Celiac Canada's website, the guide is available for free, but there's also a webinar on the website that we've done. Again, it's targeted to the food service operator in healthcare, but both those guides are available to food service managers and their teams. And then, as Julie said, if you're the patient, the resident, or the family member, these guides can be brought to the attention of the facility, and it will help them basically do a better job.
Like, thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
My friends, perhaps it's just my own thought process, but when it comes to things like food guides for those affected by celiac, should not these things be available to all people at all times? It's not merely a matter of safety for those affected. It's good business practice. People will always go where their clients' needs are met. Say a restaurant doesn't offer a gluten-free option. Chances are someone with celiac isn't going to frequent such a place. But if you make your customers aware of what's available in any sort of accessibility feature, chances are they'll look and they'll see for themselves whether the ideals match the actions, whether the spacing really is friendly for someone in a wheelchair, whether the diet really is catering to all potential dietary needs. A person with a disability is no less entitled to frequent any business in society as anyone else. And the truth is, it's just smart business to recognize that there are different needs out there. There are going to be different kinds of people who will cross your path. Now, recognizing this can require some adaptation. It can require you update your policies, your practice, even your menus. But I guarantee you it's an investment for the future. Recognizing that someone with any sort of difference, be it a dietary restriction, mobility challenge, or even someone with some sort of behavioral or cognitive impairment might come in. Understanding this, you can take steps to be reasonable and accommodating for this person. It's not a matter of they're trying to make your life more difficult. It is a matter of them wanting equality, respect, and inclusion, no matter what it is. A person with a disability just wants to find their place in society, by and large. It's not a matter of taking more than they're entitled to. It is a matter of leveling the playing field, making sure everyone can enjoy the full richness of society. Business owners might hesitate at the outset to open their minds and even their hearts when it comes to greater accommodations. But, honestly, as persons with disabilities enjoy what society has to offer, business owners, community members, they might find their own lives enriched too. They might find they learn something about the people around them. But so too is it the responsibility of each one of us to know our limits, to know our needs, to go in and to say, I am as entitled to respect and dignity in this establishment as anyone else. This is who I am. These are my circumstances. This is what I need to experience this place to the fullest. And that is not just the obligation of someone with a disability. It is the right, the worst kind of thing that anyone can do when their rights are being infringed on, is to be silent, is to say, it's okay, I'll just be that doormat, I'll just be that someone who accepts things as they are. Change happens gradually, but with little steps, all of us can create not just a better, more inclusive community, but a better knowledge base of the people around us. And honestly, businesses that don't cater to the needs of a changing population might find themselves no longer businesses. The worst thing you can do, in my opinion, to someone with a disability, is tell them what they need with no knowledge, no background, not even so much as the question of what do you think would help. That is, in effect, dictating to them what their life is, and it is not the place of anyone to impose such limits on a person. Ask the question, form a relationship, build a community bridge. Do not necessarily assume that someone with a disability is going to respond in the same way that anyone else would. Do not go out of your way to make it an uncomfortable experience. Do not get to know someone because you think you have to. Get to know them because it is the right thing to do. Get to know people because you want to expand your own horizons. Know their needs and their gifts as well. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
What? From the Kiwassa Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnham.